would like to ask Dr. Thomas to talk about the medical marijuana, medical cannabisy for the group, just a brief, to give everybody else an understanding of how we feel this is going to play out.
Sure. So in January 1, Kentucky established a Office of Medical Cannabis, which will be a change from what has always been the past. In the past, all forms of cannabis use would have been considered illegal, and so the medical use will come into play. It's a little bit different than some of the other ways that we do things, and somewhat the same. So for someone to be able to prescribe cannabis, they would have to go through and get essentially a certification to be able to do so, which largely requires additional education and then registering. The Office of Medical Cannabis has designated a group of conditions that would allow for that. Typically, any form of cancer at any stage would fall under that. Chronic debilitating pain, neurologic disease, largely things like MS and others to create debility. And then those are the main ones. That list may grow over time, but largely that's what they have designated it for. Ultimately, the way it will function is that for someone to be able to get medical cannabis, it doesn't really function as a prescription per se. There's lots of data over the years about cannabis and how it can be used and what may be beneficial from it. Some pros, some con, and so they've tried to take that information and apply it to various diseases to see if it may help. But what we don't really know in medicine is exactly a dosage. So typically what would happen is someone would see a prescriber, a person who has the ability to recommend medical cannabis, and then they would certify a card for that individual. By having a cannabis card, and what would happen is they could take it to a dispensary, and then they would be able to get various cannabis products. What's eliminated from that, though, is it's not, any of these would be for smoking. It would all be oils, edible-type things. Vape is included in that. And so once they go, they can only get, I think it's 10 days, so 10 days of cannabis before they could come back. And then their card is certified. I believe it's 2 months, and then every 2 months they would have to see their provider in order to basically recertify a card, is the way the process will function. Not every provider would choose to do that, and the most appropriate setting for that would be through a provider that they have seen an established connection to. So you wouldn't typically see that out of the emergency department. And really wouldn't likely see that much out of an inpatient. This would largely be more of an outpatient piece. It does create some different things from an HR perspective. It would be treated no differently than someone who was on a benzodiazepine like Ativan or Xanax for various disorders, or people who are taking opiates that for a chronic pain. It functionally would be the same. If someone has a prescription for that, then they certainly would be allowed to do that. However, if anybody were to show up to work and they appear intoxicated, they would follow our typical HR processes. And if they had taken too much of whatever, even if it were prescribed and it was found that they were intoxicated by the substance at work, then that we would follow our typical HR rules and laws around how that would work. And so that wouldn't really function any differently than any other scheduled medication that somebody had a prescription for, although that it's, when you say it, it's not really a prescription that you're giving. It's basically certifying a card that would say that you have a condition that might benefit from cannabis use. As far as the main issues, when we see cannabis, in the 60s and 70s, when people were using marijuana, the THC content was pretty low, 5-6%. Now, some people have gotten really good at genetically modifying cannabis products, and so sometimes the THC content can be as high as 15-20%. At high THC concentrations, it can cause folks to have issues with their bowels moving, and they can start throwing up, and so that's probably the biggest side effect that, that people will see. I've gotten a lot of questions throughout about, you know, just probably the biggest hurdle is that it's something that has been illegal and is now going to be legal, at least from a medical perspective. And from a medical piece, most of the things we've seen throughout medicine are all things that we have come that way. So opium, poppy, people noticed had a positive effect, and then that's where we ended up with morphine and oxycodone. All these are heroin derivatives, right? Morphine and oxycodone comes from heroin, just a concentrated form. And we see that with other medications as well. You know, cocaine has a use for helping with vasoconstriction, and that's how we initially use it and still use it some for packing in the nose for things. You know, Adderall is an amphetamine that is used to help treat ADHD. It's not a methamphetamine, but it is an amphetamine, and it's modified in order to have a medical use. And so THC, which is the active ingredient of cannabis, does seem to have some effect for some and not for others. And so that's essentially what's happening, is it's being moved into medical uses. So there are medical people who are very positive about it. There are medical people who are skeptical about it. I think people fall kind of on both sides. And there's enough data to support that it probably has some benefit for some folks and maybe not for other folks. And most certainly there will be challenges with this process. Most certainly there will be, you know, the program will have to change. And so there'll be questions over that. I don't know that ultimately the dispensaries will have a license. And so there's a lottery that allow for a certain number of dispensaries, and that's how people would have to go. So it wouldn't be that people could just pop up dispensaries everywhere, at least as I understand the statutes and the rules. And early on, you know, certainly not every provider will get use the term license. It's not entirely license either. It's certification to be able to decide whether that. So not every provider would do that either. But you'll likely see several that will. And the biggest thing that we've talked about is just how do you manage it from an HR process. And we would manage it the same way as we would manage any controlled substance. If any of our employees were to have a, you know, properly seen someone who was licensed to prescribe, and then, you know, and ultimately if their drug screen was positive on an employment screen or something like that, as long as they don't have clinical intoxication, then that would be a considered exemption of that use. Happy to answer your question. That's a very narrow thought about a very complex thing, but certainly something that you'll begin to see of come January 1.
But will it not challenge your medical credentials being federally illegal?
So it's a great question, which is why some people may choose not to do that. Me personally haven't planned on doing any certification until there's some. But it shouldn't, because it's kind of this gray area of because of. I think most people are thinking because they won't be licensed to smoke, there seems to be this gray line between using it in form of oils or edibles or vape to me. That's another one I would struggle a bit with. This, I don't generally recommend any type of inhalation of substances, and so the vape one would be a hard one that I would have a hard time endorsing. But there is some challenges around how that would be, but at least it appears from the state perspective and states who have already done this, like Washington, Colorado, California, other places, there really hasn't been any federal involvement of that piece. So I don't. It could be, depending on if somebody wanted to take that up, and not entirely clear yet on how there would be between state and federal.
The only thing I'll say on that is, myself and some more individuals applied for one of these large grower licenses. And we were told by every lending institution, the minute that if we were granted that license and activated that license by paying the $50,000 fee, your bank accounts are dropped. Your lender status, if you're a FDIC insured institution, you're done. I'm trying to figure out how do medical providers, do y'all operate under a federal license or a state license?
So we're all state licensed. Right. That makes a big difference. There is no The only federally licensed folks are folks that are physicians in the military, and then they are typically granted a waiver to practice in any state because they are under the government in the sense of in the military. So typically you're granted an exemption to practice in any state as a federal practitioner. You have to have a DEA license for every state you work in. So because I'm licensed in Tennessee and Kentucky, I have a DEA specifically for Kentucky, and I have one specifically for Tennessee.
How are health insurance companies going?
So my understanding is that if you were to do a visit specifically for cannabis, that would not be covered, at least by most at this point. The question becomes, though, if most likely that's not the way it would be billed. So if you were coming to see someone, more likely you came to see them because you have cancer or you have a chronic pain issue or you have a debilitating neurologic issue. And as a part of that, you've been on various medications, various therapies, and none of them are helping. And so you would likely see a scenario where a provider would say, well, why don't we try this to see if that would help? So that visit would be billed likely under an oncology cancer visit or a chronic pain visit. And the end of that visit could be multiple prescriptions and potentially a card for cannabis is the way people have outlined it to me. And so when they're billed, they're likely going to be billed in for the visit as far as the medical side, and the cannabis part would be a secondary piece of that.
Anybody else have any questions for Dr. Thomas?
It's a complex issue. I think it's one that one of the things that I think is a detractor, as an example, is because you don't get a prescription, there's really no way for me as a provider, I can kind of tell you how I think you should use that, but even when you go to the dispensary, you're really not, there is no prescriptions to say that you should use oils versus vape versus an edible, right? You just go in and you can only have up to roughly 10 days of that, and the provider gives you a recommendation, but not a prescription. And that's where I have my biggest consternation with this is, in an allopathic medicine world, I say take one tablet every 6 hours as needed because I understand the pharmacology. And in this case, we may or may not know the exact THC content in every different form. And what makes me not as comfortable with it is that I can't really tell you. I can just say, well, just ultimately use it to the point it helps. If it helps, is kind of the piece. And the literature around it is not dose specific. And so I think that's what makes me, and at higher doses, we do know it causes gastric motility issues, which people end up with hyperemesis cannabinoid syndrome, where they just vomit and retch. And so there are potential side effects and things that where it could potentially make you, it could help with nausea, but it could also make nausea and vomiting worse. And so there's just things that whoever decides to prescribe, they just need to do a good job of making sure they counsel. And then the other counsel is, technically you're not allowed to possess any cannabis product in a heavy machinery or a vehicle, right? Well, you got to drive and get to the dispensary somehow, right? And so then the question becomes, so they created two rules for that. There's a two-step rule, meaning that you have to do two things in order to get to it to be allowed to be in a vehicle. So the counsel would be is if you go to a dispensary, put it in a trunk so that it would take two steps. One, you'd have to get out of your vehicle and then go to the trunk to get it. The other is it can't be within arm's reach. So if you were at a job site or somewhere else, the way law enforcement is supposed to look at it is that if you were operating machinery, it should not be on your person or within two steps of being able to get to it. I understand they had to make some kind of rule and then able to do that, but I don't know that necessarily changes, but that's kind of some of the guidance. There is if you want to learn more about it, there is an Office of Medical Cannabis that has been created. There's a website around it that has frequently asked questions and different conditions that fall under this and what that would look like. lottery for being able to be a dispensary, I think, is this week. And then that will kind of begin to see this go forward. But there's in my mind, there's lots of challenges on its administration that I would have loved to have seen cleaned up a bit in the way of, a license to prescribe. Because to your point, it's technically a Schedule I, which we don't use at all in medicine. And so there is this federal, state kind of odd distinction. There is some talk that they're going to move it from a Schedule I to a Schedule II or III in the coming year, which would then take that away. And then there's also just the data around does it help or not. And but there's, you know, the same thing is coming with ketamine. So there's these ketamine clinics popping up all over the country that, you know, is largely used around psychiatric diagnoses. And, you know, it's one that's a challenge. It's similar to mushrooms is another big one. Psychedelic mushrooms is coming, and so people are using it for various psychiatric diseases and clinics. No, there's nowhere that psychedelic mushrooms are legal, but there are ketamine clinics you can do now for pain, PTSD, depression, and different things. And I struggle with any concept where we're using a mind-altering substance in order to try to help. I think it probably does provide short-term relief, but long-term probably doesn't necessarily. And so there's a balance with all of these medications and these type of things is probably has some benefit for some. I think probably the patient population I'm the most empathetic is, you know, a metastatic cancer where you just can't get relief from anything. I think that patient population is one that you know, we should try to do whatever we can to eliminate suffering. There are a few other indications, though, I struggle with because it potentially creates a dependence issue on various substances, and that becomes a real challenge. And we saw that with the opiate epidemic, and now still trying to fix that. And not that cannabis necessarily becomes that, but for some it can be maybe not as helpful as others. So.
The regulatory authority has authority over these dispensaries. Is it Health and Human Services or Police Department? Or
I honestly don't know. I guess I would have to look. Whoever is granting the licenses for these. So
Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Services is.
The last question I'd be curious to see, how is Fort Campbell handling this?
I don't know, but that's a great question. No, I don't know.
Or if you get stopped and you're going through land between the lakes. Because all of a sudden, you can't use federal depreciation. You can't really. I mean, unless they degrade it to a Schedule III.
I think for most folks, there's a lot in this that I think that, you know, for any individual patient, outside of just the conditions that apply for, there are very real personal effects that this could have. You know, for another example is if you go across state line, right? Like, so from state to state, the laws vary. And so, you know, forgetting that you kept something in your car, that you were, you know, you're on vacation, and you're going from Kentucky through states that don't allow that. You know, there's a lot of counseling that from a provider standpoint you would want to do. And then the other, I've checked it on this and I don't have an answer for, but from a MedMal perspective, I'm not entirely sure how they're going to handle that completely. I assume they dealt with it because a lot of states have done this, so but I would just want to understand the counseling around the MedMal piece that I don't have an answer for.
How's the hospital supposed to handle it for pre-employment screening, drug testing?
Well, it would be the same way as opiates or Xanax or like fentanyls. So if somebody is pre-employment screened and they're positive, then what would happen would be we would just ask, you know, if somebody's positive for opiates, then we would ask, do you have a prescription? And if you have a prescription, then it would be considered, you know, as long as you're using it under the authority of a physician and at the way it was prescribed, then they would be exempt as far as being an appropriate use kind of.
I think the biggest thing for this, and Dr. Thomas has talked to me 5 times this week, trying to help me understand it, but I think the thing that we've all been taught all of our life is that marijuana is illegal and somewhat wrong, and now it's moved to the legal side. It's going to be a scheduled drug, and it can be prescribed or a card from a physician. So I think it's going to be a mind change for all of us, how this is going to work.
It's no difference in you have a gun in your vehicle when you're driving down 68A. But you just, when you crossed into Lamplin Lakes, you just broke federal law.
Anybody else have anything?